Community Connections, CKMS. Local sounds, thoughts, passions, and success.
Happy Monday, Waterloo Region. It is Monday, the 20th of September, the last day of summer and election day. Go out and vote. We have, as a guest today, Bo Markham from KW Veg Fest, which is happening again, I think, this Saturday. We'll be speaking with Mo in just a bit. We've also got a lot of music today from Canadian artists and a lot of people from KW as well. So we'll be listening to that. Listening right now to the Raul Santo Domingo Experience. This is a song called, or a piece called, Scuppernong and Fufara, a wonderful title. Raul Santo Domingo Experience.
Precise than this.
Thank you.
Heaven preserve us.
And that's the Raul Santiago, Raul Santo Domingo experience. We'll be hearing more from Raul Santo Domingo in a bit. He's a local fellow from Waterloo, so hope to have him in the studio at some point. Do have in the studio Mo Markham. Good morning, Mo. Mo is the organizer for KW Veg Fest, which is happening when, Mo?
Sunday, September 26th.
Sunday,
at the Kitchener Farmers Market.
Is it an in-person experience, or are we doing this online again?
It is an in-person experience this time, and it will be all of the festival will be outside in the outdoor portions of the market, except for the speakers, which will be inside. So that's the only portion of the festival that we will have to require the vaccine passports for, is the inside portion.
Yeah, I guess vaccine passports have taken place as of Wednesday this week.
Just a few days before. So that will be that will be necessary for the speakers area inside, unfortunately.
Right. And are you doing that as an organizer of the event, or is that being handled by Kitchener staff, KW staff?
It will actually be the market staff who will be asking for the passports. They will have a staff person there asking for the passports. Good. We are also doing contact tracing in that area, in the speakers area, and we're doing that ourselves, and in the patio area, in the eating area. Okay. The rest of the festival, you know, we're having to pay attention and want to, of course, to all the COVID restrictions. So people will be counted in so that we're not overcount in any of the areas, and social distance. The booths are all set up so that they are social distance from each other as well. And, you know, so it's been a bit complicated.
I'll bet.
This year for sure.
I'll bet. Yeah. It was just so nice to have everybody crowd into Carl's Air Square the first year that you put it on. How long have you been doing this now?
This is our fourth year, but last year, actually, our festival was virtual. So so we did two in-person festivals in 2018, 2019, and then this will be our third in-person one.
Okay. Is there a virtual component this time?
No, but speakers will be, will be recorded, and we will screen. We will have those on our Facebook page and our website afterwards as well.
If you get anything interesting, suitable for radio broadcast, let me know.
I will. There are some really good ones. So there's a panel that's, you know, all about the animals. So it will be Kevin Leahy is a fellow who did undercover investigation on farms and for a number of years for Mercy for Animals and another organization. And he also did undercover work in Asia in the dog meat farms there. And so he has experience with both. And he will be speaking on the panel, and also two people, one of whom you know, Tamara Brown, Tamara has a micro sanctuary for chickens and roosters outside of Cambridge. And then there's also Jamie Cerna, and she is part of Love of Brian, another sanctuary, a larger sanctuary that has a number of different animals. So the three of them will be speaking. We also have Dr. Linda Plowright, who is a psychiatrist from the London area. And Linda will be talking about mental health and the food that we eat, and how veganism can help people, you know, eating healthy and eating a vegan diet can help with mental health issues and just health issues in general. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Dr. Tushar Mehta, who's a fabulous speaker. He will be talking about the connection between animal agriculture and climate breakdown, and also the connection with pandemics. You know, the animals on our plates and the connections to the pandemics that we have had in the past and we will have in the future if we don't make change. And we also may have a lawyer, but there's a bit of a conflict there, so we're not 100% sure. So,
right. That's just a speaker lineup. You've just...
That's just the speaker lineup. That's right.
That's incredible. Yeah.
We also will have live music and nearly 40 vendors selling all kinds of things.
Oh, cool. Any idea of the musical lineup?
At this point, we have Gaia's Eye, Gabriel Nadler from Toronto. And we have a couple of others that are not confirmed yet. Everything's been very last minute on this, I must say, but I think we will have some other live music that's more local as well.
Right. And then outside you'll have booths, vendors, people
that's
selling
right.
things, people advocating for things.
That's right. Yeah. So we have food from all over the world. We have East Indian food, Chinese, Japanese, Jamaican, Turkish, I don't want to leave anyone out, you know, lots of Canadian food as well. There's going to be ice cream and donuts, and we have some downtown vendors who will be joining us from Kitchener, Cafe Pyrus, and Queen Shawarma, mm-hmm. and the Crafty Ramen, and then, you know, vendors from all over the province. As well, we'll have all kinds of things being sold. So look forward to the ice cream and the donuts will be popular for
yes.
sure. Sausages and, vegan sausages, of course,
mm-hmm.
And cheeses and just everything you can imagine.
Yeah, it was really popular. I didn't attend the virtual festival last year, but I went to the first couple, and it was absolutely mm-hmm. wonderful. The food is great. You know, it's a lot of people think that vegan food can't possibly be very good, but that's not the case at all. A lot of people think that vegan food is made to taste good by just adding spices and peppers and sauces and stuff like that. That's not the case either. There's just so
yeah.
much variety and good things out there.
There is. I mean, and if you think about it, you know, there are maybe 7 or 8 different kinds of meat that people eat, on a regular basis. But there are thousands of plants out there, you know, that we eat, so much variety and so much can be done with them to make them interesting, you know. And, nobody eats meat without, you know, without other things added to it, right? So
yeah.
simply do those same things in a different, sometimes in a different way, sometimes a very similar way to plants. And, you know, you have some amazing food, yeah. Really good food.
Yeah. Well, you have somebody speaking on making a transition from a non-vegan diet to veganism?
I think Dr. Linda Plowright will talk a little bit about that as well. We were trying to find someone who would just talk about, you know, cooking and that kind of thing, but it's been a difficult year. Some people have family members who are compromised, or, you know, it's they've just put out an amazing cookbook and they just don't have the time because they're traveling, putting out the word around their cookbook. So, we'll have lots of different information on our website, and some vendors will be giving out information too about that. So,
yeah. So, what advice would you have for somebody trying to make that transition from a meat eating diet to a vegan diet?
Yeah. So, I think, you know, looking at why you're doing it, you know, if you think about all of the climate issues, and I can talk about those as well, but, and also, I think once people stop eating animals or start thinking about making that transition, if they actually look at the animals who they're eating and how, you know, similar they are to the animals that we have in our lives that we love, you know. There's really no difference in their, you know, they all have characters, they're all individuals, they all feel pain and all of that. So, you know, when we look at all of that, that's, you know, we start to think about it really isn't necessary because I think that this is going to taste better than this, when in reality it doesn't. You know, like they've done tests, they've done taste tests with top chefs who don't know the difference between meat and the alternatives. So there really isn't any difference in the taste most of the time. But there are a number of mentoring programs out there that people can use online free to help them go plant-based. There is Challenge 22, there's Veganuary, which is actually throughout the year. They've helped a lot of people to transition. And, you know, there are many other free online ways of transitioning. But and another really good thing is to, you know, reach out to your local vegan society. Almost every major city and many of the smaller cities as well have vegan societies, and they're always happy to answer questions.
Can't say I've ever heard of a vegan society before, but I'll bet you I'll bet you run one.
That's right. KW has a vegan society with, I think, 4,000 people. And Cambridge has a vegan society. Stratford has a vegan and vegetarian group. London has a couple of vegan societies. Toronto has like 5 or 6 of them. So there are a million of them out there. Woodstock has one, you know, so Mississauga, you know, so any city, anywhere you are, if you just search on Facebook, you know, you can get information and lots of support. People are happy to answer questions.
Is that a recent thing, vegan societies?
The last few years, yeah. I think the KW one has been going for, oh, I should know this, probably, well, it was around when I became vegan, so that it's been around for at least 6 or 7 years. So.
Okay. Yeah. And you have links to that on the website, or should I do some Googling and figure out where these are and put them on our own website?
I will send them to you, but I'm not certain that they're on our website. But that's a good thing that's something that we should put on, actually.
I will have them for sure on the Radio Waterloo website, radiowaterloo.ca/CCC in the show notes for today's program. And I'm looking at the website for kwvegfest.ca now.
Yes.
And just seeing that you've got a bunch of things in there, a list of speakers that you have, a list of vendors that are on there. So lots of information at kwvegfest.ca as well.
That's right. So, and as you said, we will have other things besides food as well. People will be selling shirts and buttons, and there's some climate-friendly soaps and laundry soap and all kinds of things. KW VegFest is put on by Kitchener-Waterloo Climate Save, and we get some assistance from the City of Kitchener and from the Downtown Business Association. But we do want people to think about the climate aspects related to eating animals. It's a transition that we need to make if we are going to have a future. You know, it's the fastest thing that we can do, and it's the easiest thing that an individual can do as well, is to make that transition. But we also need to put pressure on governments, you know, to start walking the talk, you know.
Yeah, and it's veganism is one of the four things that I know of that actually make a difference for individual things on climate change. I've heard it said that you can stop flying. That's an important thing that an individual can do. You can stop driving so much switch to an electric vehicle, perhaps. You can reduce your family footprint. You know, consider whether or not children are a major contributor to greenhouse gas emissions, believe it or not. Not that I'm advocating people put away their kids or anything like that, but it's definitely something that is an individual choice that will affect climate change. And then switching to a meat-free diet is one of the biggest changes that that you can make. Most everything else, switching to paper straws, for example, doesn't do the trick. But switching to a meat-free diet will.
I'm sorry, Bob.
Go ahead.
I keep thinking you're done. And I would say switching to a plant-based diet because, dairy and eggs also have a big impact on the planet too. Just in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, of course, because most of the dairy that people consume comes from cows, and we know that they have a huge impact on the planet. But also, the water use, the land use, so when we're raising food for animals and we're grazing animals, that land is not being used for, has been taken away from natural grasslands, marshes, and forests, if we look at the Amazon rainforest is a perfect example, more than 90% of the destruction of the Amazon rainforest has been for grazing cattle and for raising food to feed them, So it's a huge change, and it's a change that we need to make. And we need to really seriously start talking about it, on a massive scale. The United Nations has issued a red alert for humanity, we have to make this choice every day. And it's not a difficult transition to make, once you know what to do, it's really actually quite simple. Mm-hmm. And, there's so much support out there. And we need to do it as individuals, but also we need, to put pressure around that as well. So Climate Save, that's some of what we do on a local level, but also internationally. So Kitchener-Waterloo Climate Save is part of international groups and works on that from an international on an international level as well. And one of the things that's come out this year, and we will have some information about it at VegFest, is quite recently in August actually was launched the plant-based treaty to help people, yes. So people can go to plantbasedtreaty.org and sign up to go plant-based and also, help influence others to do the same. So locally, actually, we have a champion, a city councillor who has signed on as well, Debbie Chapman, and in Guelph, city councillor Gordon, what's his name? James Gordon. Has also signed on. There is one of the people who has put together the IPCC report in the past has signed on to the plant-based treaty and endorsed it. We're really trying to push this on an international level, but to get governments at all levels talking about and doing something about it. Our government, for the first time when the new Canada Food Guide came out in 2019, our government, for the first time, they looked at the science and didn't have input from the industry, right? And so what they came up with is the science says that we need to eat more plant-based food for our own health and for the planet, right? Yep. So, the science is all there. The information is all there. We just need to pay attention to it and do something about it, Right. And sorry, that's Joni has making some comments for us as well. And he will.
So you have cats, obviously, there.
I do.
How do cats become vegan?
Well, there is this is a huge controversial. You just opened a huge one.
That's what radio is for.
That's right. And I'm happy to talk about it. There is now plant-based cat food. So cats are obligate carnivores. There's no argument about that. But what they're obligated to have is the elements in meat, not the actual meat, right?
When you say obligate carnivore, that's a word I don't know.
So it means they are obligated to eat meat. So they can't just eat vegetables, right? But all of the elements that they need, except for taurine, all of the elements are present in plants. Taurine, however, is only present in meat. But years ago, a few years back, I think it was in the 80s or 90s, they discovered that cats were getting sick eating commercial cat food. And that's because the taurine that's present in the meat is killed in the processing that's necessary to preserve a dead body in a can or a bag of food, right? So they created a synthetic taurine. And if you look at any bag of commercial cat food, it's present in almost all of them, you will see that taurine has been added, and that is synthetic taurine. So since there is synthetic taurine now, cats can be plant-based. So the taurine that my cats get, I have five cats and they're all about 4 and 4.5 years old. The taurine that they get is the same as any other cat is getting, even if they're eating dead animals. So.
Right. Because taurine is taurine no matter what the source of it is, right? It's the molecule is the same.
That's right. And in 2019, at our VegFest, we had a Dr. Sarah Dodge from who is a veterinarian and a nutritional specialist at the Ontario Veterinary College associated with the University of Guelph. Mm-hmm. Dr. Sarah Dodge spoke at our 2019 VegFest, and she does research on this, and she says cats can be vegan. Cats can be, well, we say plant-based, right? Because vegan is an ethical choice that the cats aren't making, right? So, but they enjoy their food. They get lots of treats. They enjoy it very much. So.
Okay. So you say vegan, the term is an ethical choice. It's not just...
That's right. So when somebody is plant-based, it means that they, eat plants rather than animal products. But when somebody is vegan, they are making a choice to be, they're doing it as an ethical choice. So they also don't wear any animal products. And I would say, and it varies how everyone interprets it, I think varies. But for me, something like palm oil is technically it's plant-based, but for me, it's not vegan because it hurts animals and it hurts the planet, right? So for me, that's part of it for me. So, I mean, everybody interprets it a bit differently, but okay. I think the terms aren't exactly equal. So.
Okay, so vegan is more than just a plant-based diet.
That's right. It's an ethical stance. To not use or exploit animals. So. Somebody who is vegan wouldn't go to a zoo. They wouldn't ride a horse normally, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. So they don't use animals in any way.
Right, right. And I guess that's what I thought veganism was to start with, just the ethical choice to protect the animals. Yeah. The climate aspect of a plant-based diet, I only learned about that, fairly recently in the last 5 years or so. And that's really what convinced me to remove meat from my diet.
Yeah.
Not that I'm entirely meat-free at the moment, but I have that confession to make. But it's far, far better than my diet used to be.
Yeah. But and for me, that's actually... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for me, that's actually what turned me to, as well. So I was... pescatarian and vegetarian for a number of years, and for me that was around the rights of the animals, and I mm-hmm. I kind of felt like I should be vegan, but I wasn't. But I saw climate change with my own eyes when I was in British Columbia. I used to live in British Columbia, and I hadn't been there in 7 years, and when I went out a few years back and I saw the change, I was absolutely stunned. That I could see it with my naked eye. The people who are living there every day don't see it because it's gradual, right?
Yeah.
And when 7 years have gone by, and you go, 7 years is a drop in the bucket, if we look at our whole history, but I could see the change. And I was just shocked at how dry everything was. In the summer, things aren't even brown, they're yellow, it's so dry. We were at a lake. I went out to a women's camp that I had been part of before, and we're out on a lake in the middle of, the island on Vancouver Island. And there was a fire close by. We had smoke in camp. Some days we were told we had to stay inside. We watch them come with these massive buckets to take the water from the lake to the fire. We were told we might be evacuated, you know, and I didn't know this because it's just not really talked about. But, you know, my friends who live there told me that they're not allowed to water their lawns or wash their cars all summer. If you bring a water bottle or smoke in a provincial park or any of the parks, you know, the provincial or federal parks, you can be like jailed for 6 months, you know, like you have like $10,000 fines, and, you know, so it's serious, you know, and we need to do something. So I came home from that trip. And then when I flew home, I don't fly anymore. But when I flew home, we watched more fires rolling in from Washington State when I was living in Vancouver, and we landed in Calgary to change planes, and you couldn't see the mountains for the smoke, you know? So, I mean, Western Canada is on fire. Northern Ontario has been on fire this year. We have flooding, we have fires, you know, we almost lost Toronto Island, you know, so it's coming for us. You know, we're not seeing it in our back door right now, so we're not taking it as seriously, but it's coming. You know, it's coming. We know it's coming.
Yeah. So that switching to a plant-based diet really helps with that sort of thing. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. When I started doing, I got involved politically after that, and I started doing more research and just, you know, understanding what we need to do is massive. And a plant-based diet is a huge piece of that. And it's a huge piece that's being ignored. So that's part of what we're here, you know, Climate Save is all about. And, you know, putting on Veg Fest as well is to have a big vegan party, but also to, you know, to get people to try plant-based food and to understand how fabulous it can be. And, and you know, how it's not a sacrifice to make this change.
I'd like to take a bit of a break because need to digest that, if you'll pardon the pun. I'm going to have a quick listen to Sam and the Terrible News, punkish alt-punk band from Quebec. This is a song called Talkers.
Disaster.
Sam and the Terrible News with Talkers. Punk rock band from Quebec. Unlikely we'll have them in the studio anytime soon, unless they happen to be touring in the area, but there's always a possibility for having a phone interview at some point. And having a phone interview right now, or a web conference interview, with Mo Markham from KW VegFest. Hello, Mo.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
You're very welcome. We've been talking about some of the things that bring people to veganism, or at least a plant-based diet. And one of the things that's been in the news, not so much recently, but in the last year or two, is an ag gag law. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so ag gag laws, I think, originated in the United States. We import a lot of unfortunate things from the United States, and this is one of them. So they basically are laws to protect animal farms, essentially. So what happens is a lot of times that activists will go, or activists or undercover workers will go on to these farms to see what's happening and videotape what's happening and report it, right? And that has happened all over Canada and the United States. The practices have been exposed, and usually quite appalling to people. You know, they don't think beyond the piece of meat that's wrapped up in plastic, you know, on the grocery store shelf. They don't really know what's behind it. And so people are quite appalled at what happens in these places, how animals are being beaten, and how they're had, you know, so many of the things that are actually legal in Canada still. Mm-hmm. But when they're videotaped and people see them, they're appalled by them. So things like, you know, when they have runts or piglets that they don't think are going to make it or aren't going to fatten up quickly enough, it's perfectly legal and acceptable and normal practice to smash the pig's head into a concrete floor to kill them. That's a method that's used for male chicks. Of course, chickens, roosters don't lay eggs. So they either throw them in a bag and close the plastic bag and let them smother to death, or they macerate them. They put them in a grinder. The males when they're a day or so old. So all these things, you know, like castrating animals without anesthetic. All of these things are perfectly legal and you know, acceptable. But when people see them and they see the filth that these animals live in, this appalls them. And so the animal farmers have gotten together with legislators to try to silence, that's the gag part, to try to silence right. activists and give them massive fines and legal repercussions for exposing what's happening in these places. Yeah.
So you say it's acceptable, but acceptable only in that it isn't illegal. It's probably not socially acceptable.
But the reason
that it still carries on is because nobody knows this, because these practices aren't exposed to the public.
That's right. Most people don't understand. And they don't understand how filthy these places are and how you know, disease-ridden they are, right? One huge issue that is becoming problematic for us is antibiotic resistance, right? So people get sick and they end up in hospital, and, you know, the antibiotics that we have that should be able to help people when they have infections are less and less effective, because most of the antibiotics, you know how they tell you that, you know, doctors shouldn't be prescribing antibiotics willy-nilly because they become less effective. Well, something like 80% of the antibiotics sold in Canada and the United States are actually going to farmed animals, right? And so so when people eat these animals and their products, then the antibiotic resistance is just increasing in our population, right? So the antibiotics that we have can't help us anymore less and less because we are feeding so many of them to farm animals. We're feeding them to farm animals because the conditions that they live in are filthy. They're living in their own excrement most of the time because, you know, this is not like one or two animals out on, you know, the grass on a farm. These are hundreds or thousands and sometimes tens of thousands, depending on the kinds of animals, in one building, right? You know, the sheds are, you know, cleaned, you know, every few weeks, but, animal activists have exposed, you know, the conditions, animals defecating and urinating on the same floor that they're eating off of. I think it's called ProReg. That's a pig farm in Quebec in the last year or two. Activists have exposed that. They've exposed Malcolm Klimowitz, who used to live here locally in KW area. He went on a number of mink farms across Ontario and videotaped the conditions. There were the excrement from the animals. There were maggots in the excrement, and there was just like layers of the excrement on the ground. So all of these things, the industry, which is like makes a lot of money and also gets a lot of money from our governments, shall I say, the industry doesn't want these secrets exposed. So what they put pressure on governments to create these ag gag laws to stop activists or make the fines massive and the repercussions massive. So we already have trespassing laws, right? So if somebody trespasses on a farm, they can be charged as under trespassing laws, right? But these ag gag laws are meant to be punitive, right? And to basically dissuade the activists and the undercover workers from doing this, right? So in the United States, many of the ag gag laws have been overturned, and yet Canada is starting up on creating them. So in the last couple of years, Ontario and Alberta have put in ag gag laws. I think one of the Maritime provinces as well. Canada was proposing one as well, but I'll tell you what's happened. Of course, because of the election, all the bills that were before the election have kind of died. Yeah. But what happened was there was pressure to add a section to the legislation that would make it so that if farm workers, so part of the reason that they create these, you know, they pretend that this is for the safety of the public, right? Mm-hmm. Because if activists come onto the farms and spread disease, right, or spread the disease from one shed to another or from one farm to another, then that's problematic, right? But what actually happens is the activists wear full biohazard gear when they're in these situations. But the reality is our pandemic risk the risk of zoonotic diseases is really quite high.
Yeah.
Because of the conditions that these farm animals live in. So what happened with the federal ag gag law is that they wanted, there was pressure to add to the legislation that any farm worker or farmer who also went into these sheds, et cetera, and spread disease, could also be charged. So the industry wasn't going to go for that. So but we didn't actually get to see what happened with that bill, right?
But it'll be reintroduced when Parliament resumes. Do you think that bill will be reintroduced? Do you have champions federal Parliament to work on this?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens for sure. But the industry is, of course, not going to want that piece of it, you know, like they don't want to admit that they're the ones. I mean, there has never been a disease or virus spread by activists going in to expose the conditions in these places. It's spread because the conditions are filthy. People who work there every single day get, you know, get lazy about, or just get, you know, they just don't pay attention to the possibility of the risk of the risk of spreading disease.
Yeah. I and imagine so too that, that a lot of the workers who are there are the marginalized workers. You know, the day workers, the
right.
the migrant workers, the foreign workers, at the low end of the pay scale, who really don't have the time to be working on preventative measures to protect themselves, to protect the animals, because they're just working as hard as they can to earn as much as they possibly can, because it's such awful work, really.
Right, it is. And most of them aren't migrant workers because, of course, you know, fruits and vegetables are more the migrant workers, but the factory farms, they're year round, right? And the slaughterhouses, really putting us at risk. And we don't understand the risk that we're, you know, that they pose. One of the groups that will be, sorry, go ahead.
Is this something recent? Because what I've been hearing is farmers are proud of their industrialization of agriculture. And, you know, with family farms, I don't think family farms were ever considered industrialized. And so what was this as prevalent? Was the abuse, the filthy conditions as prevalent when people who owned the farms knew the animals, you know, with industrialization, animals are just a product, you know, so many soybean seeds and so many piglets. And in industrial agriculture, they're somewhat equivalent.
Yeah. So that has certainly changed because farms have become just massive now. But what we call family farms, because, you know, even though they're family owned, you know, a family farm may be, you know, is a factory farm as much as any other. So across the world, more than 90% of animal products come from factory farms. And in North America, that's well over 95%, right? So we have this vision of, you know, animals out on, you know, on pasture and stuff. That doesn't happen, right? That's not what happens with most of the animals. And it was certainly different years ago, and it's become much more industrialized. So, you know, it's hard for animal farmers to survive with, you know, less than a certain amount of animals, you know, to sell. So, you know, for, you know, a small operation would be still hundreds of animals, but many of them have tens of thousands, and that's just becoming more and more concentrated. Right. And so, and sometimes tens of thousands of animals like chickens or ducks, et cetera, in one shed, right? In one building. And so the pandemic risk, the virus risk, the risk for zoonotic diseases is massive. But anytime you have genetically similar animals, right, they're basically, and especially when they're living in these conditions, right, they're it's like a petri dish for viruses, right? And so, and actually Dr. Tushar Mehta will be talking about that at VegFest. He's one of our speakers. There will be a nonprofit called Eating Animals Causes Pandemics that will be there as well. I'm part of that group as well, just helping people to understand. But anytime you have genetically similar animals, so when viruses mutate, they just have much more opportunity for that, right? If all of the animals are genetically similar and they're living in a small area. So if we look at something like the Spanish flu, which was a swine flu that with avian origins, that came out of the United States, as far as we can tell at this point, likely from Kansas. So it was called the Spanish flu, but it wasn't actually from Spain. And that was in 1918, 1919, right? So there would have been, you know, at that point, probably at most, you know, a few hundred genetically similar animals. But, you know, look what happened. More than 50 million people across the world died, you know? And we have had actually swine flu and bird flu here in Canada. We've had people infected with swine flu here in Canada just this year and in the United States as well. And, you know, these viruses exist all over the world at all the time. Just this year, I think like a dozen different countries have had avian flu. And sometimes that has passed to humans as well. So China, India, France, Russia, I think it passed to humans as well. So, you know, these things are all there. They're all there and they're all the time. And it's really, we're playing Russian roulette, right? Yeah. We're playing Russian roulette because the next pandemic may well be much worse than this one. You know, the scientists actually expected the next one would likely be either a swine flu or a bird flu. Yeah. And some of the bird flus, the avian flus, you know, their death rate is so much higher than COVID. So COVID has a death rate of 1 to 2% of people who acquire it. Some of the avian flus, the death rate is like 30% or higher, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's no good reason to eat animals and animal products. No. There just isn't. There's so many reasons not to, you know?
Have somebody at KW Veg Fest this Sunday who's addressing that particular issue?
Yes, that's right. Dr. Tushar Mehta, he and a couple of other people. Sorry, my cats always do this when I'm on in an interview. They're so quiet the rest of the time. As soon as I'm in an interview, they start doing this. But he and a couple of other people started a page called plantbaseddata.org. So all kinds of information, scientific studies and around animal agriculture and health and what it's doing to our health, what it's doing to the planet, and what it's doing, you know, the risk that it's posing in terms of viruses as well. And they go through some of the scientific studies and explain them for people, you know, and help them to understand it. So it's a fabulous resource. It's not as user-friendly as I would like. But also Eating Animals Causes Pandemics.com, all kinds of scientific information there, and videos of scientists talking about the issue, et cetera. There's tons of information on there and on Facebook as well. Same Eating Animals Causes Pandemics.
And it's all happening on Sunday.
Sunday, September 26th at the Kitchener Farmers Market. 10 to 4, and there will be lineups. We know that, but we think it'll be worth it. There will be also live music out, and everything is outside except for the speakers. And again, the speakers, we will post videos of the speakers on our Facebook and website.
Okay, so we're recording this on Monday, September the 20th, 2021. We'll probably re-air this on our Saturday edition. So you can, if you've missed part of what Mo's had to say about animal agriculture, veganism, and KW Veg Fest, you'll be able to hear it again on Saturday, the 25th of September, from 1 to 2 p.m. on our second edition of CKMS Community Connections. Mo Markham, I just want to thank you very, very much for being on the show today. It's been marvelous to have you back on the air.
Always fabulous and much appreciated, Bob. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Mo. So go out to KW Veg Fest on Sunday, the 26th. You'll have a wonderful time. You'll have food to eat. Life is good. I want to listen to a little bit of Stuart McKee. Stuart McKee is our host for Musicians FAQ, and he's got a new album out, I think, called Save Me a Seat. So we'll be listening to the hardest part from the album. This is Stuart McKee.
I guess it wasn't that hard for you to lay down my heart. Walk away while I fall apart. I'm left behind with pieces to find. I don't know if I can find them. You've got
You've been listening to CKMS Community Connections. My name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections is a production of Radio Waterloo and is sponsored by Radio Waterloo. The executive producer is Yennefer Strong. Associate producers are Jeff Stager, Jordan Dorans, Dylan Bravener, and Steve Todd. Steve Todd also did our theme music that you heard at the opening. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday from 11 o'clock till noon, and again on Saturdays from 1 o'clock to 2 p.m. And we have interviews with interesting people like Mo Markham. We have interviews with musicians. And we have lots of new music from Canadian content artists and very often from artists in Kitchener Waterloo. Goodbye, everybody. See you next week.